And now, Bob Elliott and Ray Goulding present the CBS Radio Network.
Perfect. Perfect, Pierre.
Wonderful. Wonderful. And thank you. We can give the Teamsters the signal. Hello. Does that mean you fired up, does it?
Oui.
Yes. Well, anyway, of course, you've all guessed that this was the Bob and Ray Show.
Oh, it's going to be.
Oh, it isn't yet.
Huh? It isn't yet.
Well, in any event, it will be in a few moments, as soon as the great bird says hello to all our friends. Midget, how's the great bird?
Is he...
Hey, buddy.
Thanks a lot.
And he's a little off his feed now, but he's going to get him straightened out.
You don't think there's going to be a recurrence of his past stillness, do you?
Hey, look, I wonder if I could send out the suit now to clean.
Yes, sure thing. That's part of the deal.
On expenses, right?
Right.
Okay, the audience is all set, so go ahead with the show.
All right, well, we are going to talk to the audience a little bit later if we have time.
Thank you, Wallace, very much.
Is that his name?
Yeah, I thought we ought to find out his name rather than just keep referring to him as the Bob and Ray midget. Mm-hmm. Well, what were you saying, Bob,
before I started saying this is another quality product of Bob and Ray Laboratories that you're about to listen to.
Yeah, that's right. And how is the great bird, anyway? Is he fine? Mm-hmm. Beautiful.
Sounds perfectly all right.
Pretty sound. Mm-hmm. Wally Ballou today is standing by at a filling station, and a very unusual filling station it is, too. It is owned and operated by a woman. At least I gather that by the name of it. It's called Elsie's Filling Station.
It's on Park Avenue here in New York City, right in the heart of downtown New York.
So, Wally, come in, please, with another remarkable on-the-spot interview.
Elsie's Filling Station here on San Andreas. This is Wally Ballou speaking from Elsie's Filling Station here on Park Avenue in New York City. I'm standing just below the hydraulic lift, which raises an automobile to a height of 7 or 8 feet so that the attendant can get underneath to lubricate the parts that need lubrication. At the moment, no lubrication is going on here, and someone is, however, seated in the automobile on the lube rack, as we call it. And I'm going to see if I can get a few words from him. Will you yell down your name, please?
Colin Foster.
And, Mr. Foster, how long have you been sitting in the car on top of the rack here?
I've been here 4 days and 3 nights now. And what I'm trying to do is to set an all-time world record for sitting in an automobile while on a hydraulic lift.
Well, now, the record, as I remember it, and I'm not too sure of my facts, is 6 days, 8 hours, and 10 minutes.
Yes, that was set back in the old days before they had a hydraulic lift. It was they used to have to crank the car up. But I think that with all the modern facilities that we have nowadays and ways of getting food up to me, food and water and ice cream and grapes, that I could stay here for at least 2 or 3 weeks.
So well,
that's what I'm planning.
You certainly
about.
Started out well.
The only thing that I'd have to worry about is the pressure going out of the hydraulic system, and that, of course, would be purely mechanical.
Yeah.
It wouldn't be my fault. But nonetheless, if
well,
I
look
down for any reason at all, it certainly will not be a world record.
Well, I don't...
In other words... If something happens that I don't stay up,
yeah.
It cannot be directed,
I see.
Attributed to me directly.
Then it's not
then
your
it's
fault.
Still not a record.
I know.
No matter what anyone says.
Right.
What I want to do is set a world record that will stand, that I can be proud of, that my kids can be proud of.
Yeah.
That other people in years to come, when they check the records, will know they did it honestly and fairly. That's all I want to do.
Let me ask you this, Mr. Poster.
Any questions?
I know that they also used to have a device which a car would drive over and the attendant would go down some steps into the pit. You know what the record for grease pit sitting is?
Oh, I see. I guess I do. I think that Somebody sat in a grease pit one time for 11 continuous days over a 1928 Hupmobile.
But that wouldn't affect your record here because you're on a
Hupmobile.
You're on a hydraulic lift and 7 or 8 feet up in the air. Tell me, how does Elsie feel about your utilizing the mechanics of this hydraulic lift so that she can't have cars greased here?
Oh, no, that's the guy's last name, Roland Elsie.
Oh, it's a man. Well, we had our facts.
Don't make that mistake in front of Elsie. He'll drop you. I mean, he's tough as nails.
It's Mr. Elsie,
that's right,
we credit.
Yes, that's right.
And so this is radio's highly regarded Wally Ballou from Elsie's filling station on Park Avenue, New York City. We're trying to get to Bob and Ray.
Okay, thank you, Wally, for another wonderful report from on the scene.
Always trying to let you in on something you may not have known about. Any record like that.
You can carry the fun with you with a Columbia Stereophonic High Fidelity Portable Phonograph. And I'm looking at you there, audience, and that is exactly what I mean. Now, they have a selection of 7 new portables in smart color combinations. Do you have a sample book, Bob, of the color combinations there?
I left the swatches back in the office.
Right. Well, I tell you what you do. You go into the Columbia dealer, and he'll be delighted to spend hours with you going over the color combinations of the new portables. And there's more quality and more features and more styling built into these new Columbia portables than ever before. But now, here's my announcer, Bob.
Well, I think you've said just about everything.
Said down through C.
Oh, I have to go through D, E, F, G, and H.
Right.
Well, you get big console sound reproduced by Columbia Stereophonic high-fidelity phonographs, and you'll thrill to excitement of Stereo 1 by Columbia, number one in the world of sound. Columbia portables start at only $24.95. See them all at your Columbia dealer today.
I never saw Wallace do that before.
Time now for our Bob and Ray Good Neighbor Award for the month of August. And although the month isn't quite over, we've already discovered the one that we believe is most deserving.
Let's put it this way, Bob, that if anyone does a good deed in the remaining few days of August, they will have to be judged in September. That's all.
So that because we were so anxious to give this award to our lady guest, who's seated here with me now and who is going to tell her own story of the achievement which earned her the Bob and Ray Merritt Award as a good neighbor for the month of August. Would you sign in, please, ma'am?
Yes, Mrs. Mary Stirkenhernmuth.
Mrs. Stirkenhernmuth, we heard about the good deed that you performed through the letter sent by one of your neighbors. I believe it was Mrs. Margaret Stirkenhernmuth.
Yes, that's my...
Is she some relation?
She's my sister.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
What was it that she wrote to us?
Well, she wrote to you about the nice deed I did for the next door neighbor.
This is the neighbor on the other side.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
The Coburns. Well, anyway, their house was on fire one evening, and they came over. Mr. Coburn came over, fit to be tied. And
I should imagine.
He came over to borrow our hose. And I couldn't find it. It was down cellar somewhere, and he didn't have time to rummage about. So I suggested that he take a bucket of water with him. I had a pail handy there.
I see. You provided him with a pail?
And an entire bucket full of water. And then I gave him a bottle of prune juice to throw on the flames. It was the only thing liquid I had around the house.
The fire?
Yes.
Fire, of course, was raging out of hand all this time next door.
Then, I also gave him a glass of water to keep his false teeth in.
I don't imagine he was thinking too much about that at the time, do you?
Well,
Mr.
Coburn does
falls
think
in line
about
with being
things.
A good neighbor, just
he
the
thinks
same.
Of all those things.
Mm-hmm.
And then after the house had burned down, Mr. Colburn lived there alone. He was fine, but the house burned down. Mm-hmm. And what little that he managed to save from the flame was sitting in front of the smoldering ruins.
Yes.
And I gave him a shelter half that my nephew Lyle left there.
An army shelter half, just half.
Right, and then I gave him a box of marshmallows to hold over the embers of the fire so he could have a bite to eat.
And wasn't there something about your inviting him into the into your house where he could find shelter until he was able to rebuild his house?
No. What I did for him was to move my TV set near the window so he could look in and watch it at night.
Well, Mrs. Stuckenheim-Moth, we certainly want to thank you for coming here today and telling your story in your own words.
Well, it's a deed that I'd do again.
And you certainly have proved that you were a good neighbor for August to Mr. Colburn out there, and we want you to have this pop-up toaster, symbol of the Bob and Ray organization.
Well, if it's a symbol of the Bob and Ray organization, then that's one thing I'll remember.
And after the show, you can pick up your toaster in a choice of colors that are there at the back of the studio.
Are they anything like the Columbia phonographs? I mean, the colors?
Well, the colors are similar, yes.
Yeah. You'll
probably get one to match your Columbia phonograph.
All right.
Thank you, Mrs. Stuckenheimer.
That's kind of a hard word to remember. Or a name, I should say. Word Carr is out in Hollywood right now. He's talking with, you remember Barry Campbell, the famous movie star who's appeared on our show numberless times. He is out there now filming the new movie, If Pain Persists. And Word Carr is standing by now, all set to interview Barry on the set. Come in, please. Word Carr.
Thank you, Bob and Ray. Word Carr speaking on the set of If Pain Persists. And I'm talking with Barry Campbell, the star of the picture. And in just a moment, we're going to watch one of the crucial scenes being shot. Barry, this is the charge of the cavalry scene, I believe.
Oh, that's right.
I see all of the horses and the extras are lined up over there.
Well, the extras number about 1,100 is a tremendous cavalry charge here.
Certainly an expensive scene we're about to see put on film.
That's right. I'm a lieutenant in the 5th field flank of this particular cavalry outfit.
Stand by, everybody!
So I'm going to...
Get those extras over there with them horses!
We're going to shoot a...
Everybody go when I say go!
We have a rather important scene right now. A lot of action, very little to be
said. All right, Barry, well, you just go over and we'll follow with our microphone and listen.
Ready on the set. All you extras and horses ready. Talk. Speak. Action. Camera.
I knew your father, Ferguson. You're the first Ferguson in the 5th field flank to fail to fulfill the fundamental functions of a field flank front runner.
Frisbee, that's an awfully frequent...
Hold it! Get the horses!
Sorry, I'm sorry.
That's okay, Campbell. We don't make mistakes. We'll try it again.
Tongue twister.
Get all the horses lined up on the other side, the extras.
Horses are okay, yeah.
Talk.
Speak.
Action.
Camera.
The tape.
I knew your father, Ferguson. You're the first Ferguson in the 5th field flank to fail to fulfill the fundamental functions of a field flank front runner.
Bill Frisbee, that's a fragrant...
Come on, Campbell.
Well, I'm sorry, sir.
We'll get the extras and the horses back there.
I say Colonel Frisbee, that's a filthy, flagrant falsehood.
All you say is, Colonel Frisbee, that's a filthy, flagrant falsehood.
Bob and Ray.
All right.
Bob and Ray's announcer.
Action.
Turn it back to New York, right away.
This is Word Carr, returning it to New York.
And back here just in time, too. Gee, that was exciting. Until tomorrow.
The end of that.
This is Ray Goulding reminding you to write if you get work.
Bob Elliott reminding you to hang by your thumbs.
is the CBS Radio Network.
This is KNX.